This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn. I'm Chua Lan Teck. Rajiv Rishikaran is here. He is the state assemblyman for Bukit Gasing, back for his monthly show. We're going to be talking about water disruption. Our phone lines are open. You can call us at 77109000, WhatsApp us at 016-201-9000, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Rajiv, we've been doing this show for like, I think almost 2 years now, or more than two, slightly more than 2 years, and I can't believe we haven't talked about water.
All right. Maybe it's a good time as any to start.
Yes. Because I think you have touched upon this in one way or another, because it's a related topic to on all things local government. Maybe you can start by giving us an overview of how the water supply system works in Klang Valley. How does water go from the river into our taps?
All right. Thanks for having me back. Let's try to have a crash course in the water supply industry, especially in recent times. A lot of us have been affected by certain water disruptions. I think a lot of listeners out there would be concerned about this question. So, in Selangor and KL, water was previously run by four concession companies. Three of them did water treatment and one of them did water distribution. So we all know the water distribution company, Shabazz. Three others manage a total of 30 plus water treatment plants. So the fragmentation of this industry, some companies manage their treatment plants well, some did not manage their treatment plants very well. Definitely the distribution was not up to par, not in my expectations anyway. And we have taken back, Selangor has worked towards taking back the water industry from these private concessions to be under the control of the state government. Now, a little bit about what could have happened is that throughout the last 20 years, we should have seen investment, steady investment into our water infrastructure, from the pipes that flow from the water treatment plants to the treated water reservoirs that flow from the treated water reservoirs to our house. Those have been long neglected. We could have also should have seen improvements to the water treatment plants. A lot of focus is given on the one treatment plant, Langat 2, but we have 30 over other water treatment plants that are in operation. Some of them have been in operation for over 20, 30 years, and they need maintenance and they need necessary upgrades to keep them performing well. So the lack of investment and attention that the private concessions have paid towards this have led to some neglect. And only at the end of 2015 did the Selangor government manage to take back Shabazz from private hands. It was under Puncak Niaga Holdings, and now we are in the midst of turning things around. So it's a work in progress. It's actually one where the Selangor government only recently got to take over and got to run the services. So we have poured in investment. I think throughout the show today we'll talk about what has been done. And basically the water comes from the north and the south of the state. We have the Sungai Selangor River at the north that supplies a lot of the water. We have the Sungai Semenye and Sungai Langat River in the south that also supplies a sizable portion of the water. We have another major river that cuts through the middle of Selangor, the Klang River. However, that is just way too polluted to economically treat and supply that water to our households.
That brings me to the next question. What causes the disruptions?
All right, so that's a very wide question, because we have seen a variety of disruptions. So in recent months or in the last couple of years, we have had disruptions due to pipe bursts. These tend to be very localized disruptions. So I just got a notification on my phone on the way here that there's a small pipe burst in Section 16 PJ. And so only that few roads in that area around that that location would be affected, and most of the rest of the Klang Valley is not affected by that. So localized disruptions because of pipe bursts, they happen maybe a bit too frequently. This is due to the fact that a lot of our pipes are way beyond their lifespan. We have a lot of asbestos cement pipes. In short, we call them AC pipes. So these AC pipes are good for 20 to 30 years. But a lot of them have have aged well beyond 40 or 50 years old. So they are old, they are brittle, and they are more likely to break. And we need to get moving to replace them. And we've actually started the process on that. So we've got pipe bursts as one source of disruption. The second one is river pollution. So now every water treatment plant in the world basically has parameters of how much pollution it is capable of treating. So when you pull in water from the river, you kind of have limits, and you know you're going to treat pollution out of it, you're going to treat dirt out of it, and you have an expectation of how much pollution and how much dirt that you're going to treat out of the water. Water treatment plants can normally go a bit above and beyond the norms. But sometimes when heavy pollution hits the river, it is unable to treat the pollution. So in cases when that happens, what we need to do is, to be a responsible government, you need to stop the water treatment plant. You cannot let the water treatment plant let the water through its processes. It will not be treated adequately and will be supplying compromised water to households. And I don't think anyone wants that. So for that period where the river is polluted beyond a certain parameter. Now, different water treatment plants have different parameters. So once rivers reach their limit, for example, if the ammonia level in the river is too high that the treatment plants can't treat it, then we've got to stop the intake, which basically means shutting down the water treatment plant. Sometimes it's a few hours, sometimes it's a whole day. The river is active. The river is continuously flowing. So we don't pull water out of lakes. We pull water out of rivers. So it's continuously flowing. So in a matter of hours or sometimes in a matter of a day, the pollution would have passed. And then the water treatment plant will resume. So during the time when the water treatment plant shuts down because of this reason, then a larger group of people are affected. So it depends which treatment plant, because it's not always the same treatment plant that is being affected. Now, if you look at the disruptions over the last 2 years, it's not consistent of which plant. It's sometimes different plants, and different plants have different capacities. Even though they're on the same river, they may be at different ends of the river. All right. So it depends on how bad the pollution is and how fast it takes for the pollution to wash away. If it's raining season, you know, the river moves faster, the pollution gets washed down the intake point faster, and things can resume quickly. And sometimes it takes a day for that to happen.
We have a listener who sent in an SMS saying, what are we doing to clean up the rivers in KL? I guess he's referring to the one in Klang, Sungai Klang.
Yeah. So efforts are ongoing to clean up. I think that's a whole new, whole different show. But in general, yes, efforts are ongoing to clean up the rivers. I think one of the big problems that we have is that we discharge too much of wastewater into drains. Now, anything that you discharge into drains ultimately ends up in a river. So drains flow to bigger drains, flow to bigger drains, and then they flow into rivers. Maybe a small river that flows into a bigger river. So you may not be necessarily living next to the Klang River. You could live 10 kilometers away from the Klang River. But your whatever that you discharge from the drain in front of your house, your shop, eventually makes its way to a river. So the thing is, by right, properties should be discharging all their wastewater through the indoor water system. But some of our properties are too old, like many parts of PJ. They're too old. They don't have this infrastructure in place. And because of that, we have seen recently lots of massive amount of road diggings to expand these sewage pipelines throughout parts of the Klang Valley, which do not already have proper connecting sewage systems. So many parts of PJ are not connected to proper sewage systems yet. So that is a work in progress. It's a massive project that's going to take over 10 years, the River of Life project. But it's something that is ongoing, but it's massive. It will take time for us to get there. So we've got to get households, we've got to get shops to dispose any wastewater through the sewer system. We cannot be disposing any more wastewater through open drains. Now, drains are there to channel storm water, rainwater. So if our drains are just channeling rainwater, the rivers to be pretty clean. So we've got to take care of that. We've got to also end this small sewage treatment plant systems that we have. So we have a lot of condominiums, you know, 200 units that have a small sewage treatment plant. We have small housing areas that have a small sewage treatment plant. This very tiny, if you see this very small indoor water premises in your taman, you know, wherever you are, PJ, Kajang, these small treatment plants are limited in their capability of treating wastewater. So your wastewater that ends up there, oftentimes they overflow and flow into the drains because they can't be treated adequately in time, and that also contributes towards pollution in the river. And then we've got the most direct problem of people just dumping things in the river. So we've got lots of properties by the riverside, you know, lots of houses, commercial areas, industrial areas, and these are people who just dump the rubbish, dump the waste straight into the river. We've got massive amount of illegal dumping along the Klang River at many different points. You've seen this covered in the newspaper from time to time. So this will involve a lot of enforcement action to just prevent this direct dumping. So you've got the direct dumping, you've got the indirect dumping, and it's a work in progress. There is effort being put in place, but it's something that we cannot realistically expect to happen in 1 or 2 years. It's something that it's going to happen over the next 10, 15 to 20 years.
We're talking today to Rajiv Vijayakaran about the problem of water disruption. Our phone lines are open. You can call us at 7710 9000, WhatsApp us at 0162019000, or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll talk more after the break. You're listening to Live and Learn, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn. I'm Chua Antik. In the studio with me is Rajiv Vijayakaran, Bukit Gasing State Assemblyman. Back for his monthly show, we're talking about the problem of water disruption. We have a phone call on the line. Oh, we lost it. Well, if you tried to call us, try calling again. Our phone line is 7710 9000. You can WhatsApp us at 0162019000, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. So, Rajiv, you kind of give a lay of the land of how water is supplied to every house in PJ. Who is responsible for making sure that there is a continuous and clean supply of water to Klang Valley?
Well, interestingly enough, water supply is both a shared jurisdiction of the state government and the federal government. The state government's jurisdiction is on raw water. So if you talk about the rivers itself and the permission of who can draw water from the rivers, who can draw water from lakes and from groundwater, that power is under the state government. So in Selangor, we have Lembaga Urus Air Selangor, or LUAS. They are the agency that licenses the use of raw water in the state. So if you're a factory drawing water from the state, if you're a water treatment plant drawing water from the state, from its rivers, from its lakes, from its underground water, you need to get a license and permission from LUAS. So their job is to make sure that we have a sufficient amount of raw water. And in Selangor, that's not a problem. We do have sufficient amount of raw water to draw in. Our problem now is maybe the quality of the water, as we were talking before the break. So then we have the federal government, and they have two agencies involved. So the one agency is the Department of Environment, DOE, or Jabatan Alam Sekitar. Their job is to look at pollution. So if you're a factory polluting the drains, polluting the river, or just discharging pollution way beyond what's permitted under law, Jabatan Alam Sekitar's job is to catch you. So you've got Jabatan Alam Sekitar tackling people who pollute. So if you pollute the river, they come and catch you. So it's their job to ensure sufficient monitoring and enforcement action in this area. So, and that's why we need their cooperation. So in the incidences of pollution that happened September, October last year, even our Menteri Besar came out quite strongly against officers in the Jabatan Alam Sekitar, the Department of Environment, for being slow to reach the site to get into the factories and take action against the culprits. So we need to work together on this. It's necessary because they are the ones, they are the government agency with the authority To go into factories and check the pollution levels that these factories are emitting. And then you've got SPAN, Suruhanjaya Perkhidmatan Air Negara. So this is another federal government agency. It's under the Ministry of Energy, Green Technology and Water. And this ministry basically licenses any water treatment plants or water distribution companies. So Shabas and Splash and Puncak Niaga and Abbas, the four concessionaires before the consolidation, they get their licenses from SPEN, the federal government agency. So now when Selangor wants to take over the water industry, basically we need to get the operating license from SPEN. So raw water is controlled by the state, but the business of treating water and distributing water, that's under SPAN, a federal government agency. So it's actually both the state and federal government that's involved. I think there's a lot of misconception that it's totally under the state. So if we had a good concessionaire, you know, if we had a very competent water distribution company that was operating, I don't think the state government would ever venture into wanting to take over the water industry. We wouldn't have to. It would be running well. But we look at Shabas. They had a very lopsided contract. And most consumers may not be aware that in 2009, 2012 and 2015, they were due for tariff hikes. So your water bill has been frozen since 2008 with the change of government, but actually it was supposed to go up 37% in 2009, 25% in 2012, and 15% in 2015. You add this together, your water bill today would have been double if we did not embark on this takeover process. But Shabas, who was supposed to get that lucrative tariff increases, has been failing to invest sufficient amount into replacing pipes that are old, into upgrading infrastructure so that we have seamless water delivery. So water disruptions have been happening for a long time. They did not just happen suddenly after the state government took over a year ago. They've been happening for many years. And I'm for one and glad that we actually took the risk to embark on this so that we can at least turn things around and not be saddled with a concession company that was just going to get tariff hikes without delivering the necessary infrastructure for clean, continuous supply of water.
We have a phone call from Bala. Bala, if you can hear us, ask your question.
Okay, I've got two questions. One is, in my Taman, this is called Taman Fern Grove in Cheras, we have got these AC pipes which break down all the time. And I think the waterworks people have been sending the emergency crews, I think contractors at odd hours, that so this is all costing money. I know that there is a campaign to reduce the NRW. And under that, they should prioritize where there is more incidences of leakages or pipe failures, like such as my Taman Fern Grove, which will save money and also save a lot of headache for us. The question number two is, I was involved in the Kajang 2 sewerage system. And there they found that, you know, the study showed only 13% of the household, discharge contributing to the pollution of the river Langan. The rest are all illegal factories and such illegal activities. So what is the state government doing about controlling this, so that the major problem is actually the industrialist, not the household? Thank you very much. I will.
All right. Thank you, Bala. So you've got two questions to dive in. Let's talk about the second question first. No doubt that there are plenty of illegal factories. This is a legacy problem. There has been efforts to solve this. Now, it's a complex problem because just shutting down all factories at a stroke of a pen would render thousands and thousands of Malaysians unemployed. What we need to do is legalize some of those which can be legalized, because not all of them on riverbanks or sensitive areas, they can be legalized. And those which are in sensitive areas, they need to move to suitable areas. And that is underway. So in fact, this morning, there was a meeting, because I sit on the Select Committee of Water Services in Selangor. So this is a select committee made up of 7 state assemblymen. We monitor the situation and we continuously give advice to the government. So while we don't run the show, the ex-cos run the show, we monitor the situation. And MPKJ was briefing us and showing us the statistics and the numbers and pictures of enforcement actions on factories along the riverbank. So action is underway in that aspect. But also the fact that it's true that not everything is domestic. In fact, domestic is only one portion of pollution, contributing pollution to the river. Sewage treatment plants is a sizable contributor. Sewage treatment plants, you know, the small ones that we talked about a little earlier in the show. So they are also a significant contributors. Markets are big contributors also, because there are a lot of organic waste generated in wet markets. So they are a contributing factor. And factories are also a contributing factor. So it's a mix of everything. In fact, sometimes, you know, just having one or two factories on the river can absorb the pollution and deal with it. But when you have too many factories or too many houses, then the rivers can't cope with it. It's a compounding factor. You know, you've got a rapidly growing Klang Valley, ever more amount of houses being constructed, even more factories coming up, and so then this just adds on to the problem. So we need to deal with all angles to reduce pollution into the river, and that's important. So those efforts are underway. And to your first question on pipe replacement, so yes, last year the state government kicked off our pipe replacement programs. So we have identified a number of hotspots. I absolutely agree with you, Bala. We need to prioritize the areas which has the highest incidence of burst pipes. So last year we started off with 12 areas in Selangor and KL. 50 million was put aside for that, and those projects have started and in fact have completed last year. This year, a whole bunch of projects. We talk about 130 million. I think it's up to 150 million is available this year for pipe replacement projects. So yes, as you mentioned, they come in the wee hours of the night to repair your burst pipes. I'm very proud of them working round the clock to ensure a speedy recovery whenever there's an incidence of burst pipe. At the same time, we also acknowledge that areas which have high frequency of burst pipes, like what you mentioned, your area, especially those AC pipes which have, you know, gone way past the 30-year lifespan, they need to be replaced. So it's happening, it's in progress. So we've got a whole number of projects this year with over 100 million ringgit, and this is going to continue next year and the year after that. It's not going to be a one-off project. So the state government is committed to investing money. Selangor, the new company that has taken over the water services, is committed into investing money into improving the pipes.
What are you replacing the pipes with? Is it another 30-year lifespan material?
They're using different material, I think ductile iron, but they also have a few options depending on the soil conditions in respective area. I'm no civil engineer and soil expert, so I'll leave it to those experts to determine what kind of pipes are being used. But, you know, every form of pipes would have a lifespan limit. I don't think it's realistic to expect us to have materials that will last forever. So we've got to, you know, keep up with the life cycles of products. It's not just the pipes, but it's also your treatment plants. You've got to get pumps replaced when their life cycle is over. We don't want them breaking down every 2 days because, you know, they're so worn out. So parts in your water treatment plant, in your piping distribution, your pumping plant rooms, everything needs to be maintained and needs to be replaced as they reach the end of their lifespan.
Yeah, burst pipes is one of our common comments from listeners. There's one here from WhatsApp who says he lives in Jalan Sri Hartamas 2 very frequent burst pipes every month, he say. Are there any plans to replace pipes in that area?
I don't have the information for Hartamas or Cheras areas. I'm sorry, I can't provide that online, but you could always contact AIS Selangor. You have your respective district office and you can inquire with them on your area when is it due for replacement. So for those for PJ folk, the good news is that starting soon, hopefully by next month, Section 5 and Section 17 will be the first recipients of the pipe replacement program. So the consultants and the contractors have been appointed and they are finalizing the plans. And once that's done, hopefully by next month, we will start seeing the work rolling out.
What's the hotline to call? Who can they contact if someone drives past a burst pipe?
All right, so we have our AIS Selangor hotline. We'll get this out, and by the end of the show, we'll get it announced. But besides the hotline, we also have an app. So if you've got an iPhone or Android, just get the app in the App Store. And
that's the AIS Selangor app.
Yeah, AIS Selangor app. Okay, I've got the hotline. It's 1-800-88-5252.
1-800-88-5252.
Yes.
Okay, we'll repeat it at the end of the show. Another question we have from a listener on SMS is, could there be more stringent control around the areas where, at the points of river where the water treatment plants operate? Like, is that a workaround?
They ask that the effort is ongoing, but it is not just at the riverbank, you see, because all drains in Malaysia ultimately flow towards a water body, a river, especially in Selangor when there are no big lakes, so it's all rivers. So even if it's 10, 15 kilometers away, a pollution release into a drain would likely make its way to a river. One of the big incidences that was played up very much in the newspaper was the Sungai Buah pollution incident. So these chemicals were spilled on the side of Elite Highway, and this was in Negeri Sembilan, and the chemicals flowed from the side of the highway to a drain, and they flowed many kilometers along the drain into Sungai Buah in Negeri Sembilan, and that small river flowed into Sungai Semeni in Selangor that caused disruption to our river. So the pollution was then treated with activated carbon, but there was a shutdown of about 30 hours or so. So that interrupted water for the southern part of Selangor. So even if the pollution is not poured into the river, or whether it's intentional by the side of the highway or a discharge from a factory, if it's into a drain, it would flow from a small drain to a bigger drain to a bigger drain and ultimately to a river. So it's very important for us to control pollution everywhere, not just near the river.
Yeah, I think most residents would be glad to hear that explanation, that if there is a pollutant in the river, that it's better to have the water be cut off and be treated before it comes to the pipe. But it's not often that this explanation is communicated across to the residents. Can more be done in terms of communicating in advance of a disruption?
I think it's quite difficult to communicate in advance because pollution incidences or these disruptions are not planned. Oftentimes, you know, be it a burst pipe or be it a source of pollution in the river, and it doesn't happen that often. It happens a couple of times a year, maybe, especially in the last year, but it doesn't happen that often. But when it happens, it's something that you have to react to straight away. So, you know, you detect the pollution, you straight away protect your treatment plant and your down pipes by shutting off the intake. And then you have to inform people. So if you have the Shabazz app, you get notified through the Shabazz app. If you follow Shabazz on Facebook, they notify you that. They also notify through the media. Depending on how serious the breakdown is, that would depend on how much coverage the media may give the issue. So we could do better in communicating this out to the public. We should definitely try to improve that. That was one of the takeaways of the disruptions that happened in September and October last year, that we really need to improve that. So granted, but to notify you before the disruption may be somewhat impossible because these are not planned incidences. Now, occasionally there'll be planned maintenances. So when planned maintenances happen, then you are notified in advance, a week, 2 weeks, or 3 weeks before, so you can prepare for it. You can store additional water. You can plan your household chores around the water disruption. Please do not wash clothes during that period of disruption. You should conserve water as much as you can. Do not do heavy washing or cleaning of your house during that time. So those are some things that we can do for planned disruptions.
I want to come back to the point you make about how our sources of water comes from the north in Sungai Selangor and
Sungai Selangor.
The south in Sungai
Semeni and Sungai Langat.
Langat. There's a few questions about Langat too. They want to know what's the current status. I think, was there a pollution recently? Before you answer, there is also a question about, I think these are all related, how can monitoring of dumping be improved in the rivers? And finally, from WhatsApp, the same person that texted from Cheras, talking about rivers as well, he noticed that in the Sungai Langat River, there are people washing their motorbikes.
All right, so that's a lot of change of behavior that we need to instill in our community. Let's say we start with Langat 2. So Langat 2 water treatment plant is under construction. It is scheduled to go online in 2019, in 2 years' time. It's in progress and it's on track to start operations in 2019. At least that's what I'm told. So it's on track. So Langat 2 doesn't draw its water from Sungai Langat. Langat 2 draws its water from Pahang through the tunnel. So then that would depend, if there's any issue of pollution, it would depend on Pahang monitoring their river and making sure that there's no pollution in Sungai Semantan in Pahang. So hope that will not be an issue in time to come. But Langat 2 draws its raw water from Pahang. And with regards to
dumping and washing of...
I think it's a very challenging question. I always believe that enforcement's got to step up. The more we catch people who do this, and our Menteri Besar has made it very clear when he took office 2 years ago on how he joined raids and efforts by the local councils to catch lorries dumping waste illegally. It's very important that we continue this effort and to drive home that message that it's a high risk crime to commit. So even in PJ now, we have mobile CCTVs that I'm working on with MPPJ. So we put mobile CCTVs in hotspots to catch culprits. And once we catch the culprits, and then they're given heavy penalties. And this will, in the long run, create that culture of fear, because there's a risk that you get caught on CCTV for dumping. So that's what I'm doing in my constituency in PJ, and other enforcement, including sometimes they camp out at the hotspots around the clock to nab these people.
Okay, we have to take a short break for market update, but after we come back, we'll talk more about water disruption with Rajiv Vishakaran. Our phone lines are open, 77109000. You can WhatsApp us your question at 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll come back after this short market update. You're listening to Live and Learn, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon, welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Chua Intake. Rajiv Vishakaran, Bukit Gasing State Assemblyman, is with me today to talk about water disruption. And a lot of questions coming in. Just want to get to a few SMSs. There's a listener from who live in Bandar Sungai Long in Cheras. Thank you for this long-awaited topic. Wanted to mention that he sees a lot of coffee shop operators who wash dishes and throw away their waste into the drains behind their shops. Drains are exposed and not shut with concrete slabs. Even when there are concrete slabs, shopkeepers would be drilling holes into it to release wastewater. What can be done about this?
Well, that's absolutely not acceptable practice. Do report it to your local council. I think Bandar Sungai Long will be under MPKJ. Let them know so that they would do more to act against these shops. We should not be still doing things like that. Every shop, every restaurant should have a proper sink with a grease trap to trap the grease so that the water that is released is not filled with grease and fat and causes harm.
I think the listeners is very, very sympathetic to how big the area is as well. So I think he's asking that maybe if you can't catch the perpetrators, just put the concrete covers on the drain so that this doesn't happen.
All right.
Yeah, and another one is, could you elaborate on the steps taking place to replace pipes? How long, how extensive, and how long the entire project will take?
I think pipe replacement is not a one-off project. It's something that's going to be ongoing, and it must be ongoing for the rest of our lives. It's something that maybe it's a low-hanging fruit today because we're going to spend up to 150 million ringgit every year for this year, next year, and 2019. That's the plans that the MB has laid out. And we have a lot of hotspots to deal with today. But let's say when we are done with the hotspots, at the last, they have identified 84 hotspots in Selangor. But even when we're done with that, then comes down using analysis to see where are the pipes old and most vulnerable and to have them replaced before they start breaking regularly. So I have a vision that we get to a point like Singapore where we have less than 10 burst pipes incidents a year. So right now we are far from that. Right now we have about 5,000 a year.
That's so the entire Malaysia or Selangor?
Entire Selangor and
Selangor.
KL.
Okay.
Yes. So it's a long way to get there. So it's not a one-off pipe replacement. It's going to be something that's going to be continuous every year.
We have a question about from a listener about why was the last major water disruption in Selangor over the issue of the TNB substation, and as well as what happened closer to the end of the year during the holiday period.
Yeah, so I think that was one that affected a lot of people. The water treatment plants are a very big consumer of electricity. So for the maintenance of that TNB substation, I wish there was sufficient gensets provided for so that the water treatment plants could run as normal. But for some reason, that was not possible. Apparently, we were told the market doesn't have sufficient gensets of the right kind for that purpose. So it was really regrettable that that TNB maintenance had caused electricity disruption to the treatment plant. The reason the recovery took long was because, unlike a burst pipe incident, let's look at the burst pipe incidents first. So when a pipe, let's say like the one that happened in Section 16 today, took place, the production of treated water is still ongoing. We have a lot of treated water reservoirs between the water treatment plant to your house. So along the way, the treated water reservoirs, they collect the water and it's like a big storage tank. In fact, sometimes you see these big tanks on top of hills. You see these mushroom-shaped tanks in your housing area, so they collect the water. So when the burst pipe is replaced and repaired, and then water can resume flowing, your reservoirs are filled up. Because in the absence where the water couldn't flow through to your house, it was collecting because the production was the same. So that's why the disruption due to burst pipes, the recovery period is very much shorter. But however, when the treatment plant shuts down, the lack of production during that 18 hours, it is a bigger gap to fill. So when the production resumed, it took time to fill up all the network of pipes that were flowing from Sungai Selangor. So Sungai Selangor supplies 60% of the water. All right, it's the biggest source of our water, and taking time to flow through all the pipes to fill in all the empty tanks in everyone's house, because after 18 hours of shutdown, most of us had empty water tanks in our rooftops. So the recovery time will take some time. Some people will get their water in a few hours after the treatment plants are turned on, and some people get their water a bit later. So that's why the recovery time takes long. There was a side benefit of doing it in December because water consumption, it's lowest at that time, that end of December. So, you know, 19 December, initially when I first was told of this, it was just 19 and 20th December, so it was still a few days away from Christmas. It should not have been too bad, but later the official announcement worried everyone because it was announced with 19 to 24th of December. But the water consumption at that time would if you compare water consumption throughout the year, it's low because a lot of people on holidays, production in commercial areas are low, production in industrial areas are low, and with the lower consumption at that time, the recovery is faster. The recovery would have been probably a week if you were to do it on any normal working week. So if it happened like this week, if it happened today, the recovery would probably take up to a week. So there's some... It's not pleasant. It's definitely not pleasant. And in very possible, we should not have maintenance work disrupting water flow. And when we actually have no choice, that's when the pre-warning notice is there, so you store sufficient water. Now, I've installed tubs in my house of water so that I can last for a good 3 to 4 days in my own home, because you know my house is not extra special. It's not spared the disruption that everyone else also faces. It's not easy, but we also ran recovery services to people who needed water, so especially vulnerable situations, old folks home and whatnot. Those who were in need of water, they still could have called Aislango, and Aislango did dispatch water tankers to help those in need. But the general consumer would have kept sufficient water to ride out the period of disruption.
Speaking about user behavior, right? Are we using too much water?
Oh, most definitely, yes. So on average, a domestic user would consume about 250 liters of water a day, and we need to bring them down to about 150. So we are a large consumer of water nationally as well as internationally. 150 would be a recommended amount, so we can get there. You know, little things like you're switching off the tap while you shave or brush your teeth, how you use water in the kitchen, how you use water in the garden. In fact, if we all do some amount of rainwater harvesting, you can do all your gardening with harvested rainwater rather than treated water. So there are ways to manage your water usage to reduce your dependence on treated water. By all means, use as much rainwater as you want, because you know, whatever you don't use is just going to flow down a drain into a river. But treated water is precious. Treated water is expensive to produce. And we certainly are consuming more than our international counterparts are. So if you look at Singapore, Australia, US, they're all consuming much less water per person than we are in Malaysia.
150 liters
a day.
So we are consuming... over that,
yeah,
by 100 liters, that's
yeah,
a lot of water per person. It's not going to be raining all the time during dry season. Are we going to be able to cope this year?
Yes, we have sufficient raw water. We have projections throughout the year, and we have enough people monitoring this. So during dry seasons, river levels get lower, but we've got dams, and so we monitor the level in the dams. We release water when necessary. For the coming year, there should not be a shortage of raw water. Where challenges would be in disruptions. So we talk about burst pipes or water pollution incidences. That's still the bigger concern, rather than running out of raw water. So we should have more than enough raw water to last us.
You know, we speak last month about the plastic bag tax, right? Of a 20-cent charge whenever you want to request for a plastic bag when you do your shopping. Do you think something like this could be implemented to incentivize people to use less water instead of, you know, giving free water for the first however much cubic meters?
All right, so in Selangor, we are giving the free 20 cubic meters of water. I think that's noble. That's fine. I mean, it's controversial among the urban crowd, you know, who believe in water conservation. But 20 cubic meters for a typical family, it's fair consumption. The issue arises when you start consuming way more than that. So do we maintain our normal water tariffs for those who consume way more than that, or do we start putting up progressive charges for excessive consumption? I think these are all options to be considered. They are politically sensitive. I would admit upfront, Penang got a lot of flack when they did charges for excessive water consumption above a certain level. Then it just got very expensive. We also want to try to find that balance, because we don't have steady household sizes. We've got a lot of two, three people size households. At the same time, we have a lot of families which are 7, 8, 9 people. big. So the water consumptions domestically, it varies a lot. And so trying to figure out where is the threshold where we start charging you a high amount to deter usage. I think that's not easy to arrive at. But that's definitely an option on the table, how we can use pricing. But right now, I think most people will not pay more than 20, 30 ringgit of water bill. So water cost for most listeners out there will not be big in terms of your monthly spending. So, you know, even if you double it overnight, it's still not going to be big compared to your overall monthly spending. I mean, I think if you check your water bill, a lot of listeners out there may even use less than 10 ringgit of water a month anyway. Mm-hmm. So being conscious about the water usage, you know, having that that awareness of how I can save treated water in the kitchen, in the bathroom, in the garden, that will also go a long way.
We have a caller, Muhammad Idris. Idris, hello. Thank you for calling. Oops, we lost him.
This doesn't seem to be a good day for callers. Yes.
So just a follow-up question on that, because water resources is limited, right? Scarce. How are we managing it different this year that we won't have a dry season? We won't have a period where there will be a shortage.
We're actually okay. We're not too bad with regards to raw water. So, you know, our main rivers that we harvest water from, they're generally okay. I think there was just once in 2014 that due to abnormal dry spells, there was a shortage of raw water. But in general, we don't have an issue with the quantity of raw water. So we just have enough. We're not as challenged as Singapore is with regards to the availability of raw water. We don't have the abundance of, say, Pahang and Perak, but we are not as challenged as, let's say, Singapore is with regards to the availability of raw water. I think where our challenge lies now is the delivery of the services. We've got to fix up our piping systems to ensure that we don't have breakdowns that affect our consumers. We've got to ramp up our reserves of treated water so we can weather the pollutions better. So, you know, right now our reserves of treated water is not very high. It certainly can be, should be improved. In fact, we discovered after taking over from Shabazz that there are about 200 water reservoirs. You know, the big mushroom things you see in your housing area, there are about 200 of them which are not in use, not in operation, and such a waste. So we need to improve on this so we have sufficient treated water that when the treatment plant shuts down, there's enough treated water in our treated water reservoirs to supply to us. So these are the areas that we can improve on our services. But I'm glad that, you know, for now we our population hasn't come to that level. And if we fix our NRW, which is still at over 30%, if we fix our consumption, our domestic consumption, we can reduce 250 liters per day to, let's say, 200 liters per day for a start. That should reduce the demand for water. And with that, we should be able to go for quite a long time based on the rivers and the rainfall that we enjoy in Selangor.
The caller that we lost just now, Idris, wanted to ask, what is the possibility of using groundwater during emergencies for public taps?
I understand that there's not really sufficient amounts to make it a real impact. We do consume a lot of water in Selangor. So we would need a very, very huge amount of groundwater available for that.
Okay, then to end off the show, what advice can you give to those who will be affected by water disruptions, either because of a burst pipe or because of planned maintenance?
Well, I think we can all do our part to equip ourselves so that if there's we don't want disruptions, we don't welcome disruptions, but at least we could equip ourselves in case there's a disruption, we have sufficient stored water in our house. It's good to have at least one day worth of water in your water tank. If your tank is not sufficient, maybe you could expand your water tank or get a second water tank. That's something we could do on our end. But I think a very important thing that we can do on our end is to start being conscious of how we use our water and to see how we can find ways to save and consume less water. The consumption of, if we can reduce our consumption of water, it is not making us extra stingy, because, you know, let's realize that our counterparts around the world are getting by very comfortably with a lower water consumption rate. So it is not necessary that we have to suffer. In fact, we are just being extra.
Maybe you're drinking a lot more water.
somehow I just don't think we would be drinking more than 3 liters of water a day. So the extra 200 over liters, that's going down the toilet, literally.
Okay, so the number to call again if you see a burst pipe on the road is 1-800-88-522. And thank you, Rajiv. You've been listening to Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.